to this week's edition of our little show we call Blind Like Me. I'm Phil Parr. You probably already knew that, though, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
And, there's Shelley Probst. Imagine her being on Blind Like Me. How are you?
I'm doing fine today. Phil, how are you?
I'm good. It's a beautiful day in Texas. You're in where now?
You're in Boston, Massachusetts.
Boston, Mass. I listen to Click and Clack the Tappet Brothers. You know who they are?
I actually have to admit, I don't.
They're the guys that do a show on NPR called Car Talk.
Oh, okay.
And they're very well-educated guys. It's on NPR. It's on down here on Saturday mornings. And they're very Boston-speaking.
They've got the Boston accent.
They have a heavy Boston. Really, I love it. I think it's a delightful accent. It's it sounds cultured or, to me, educated, you know. I don't know. I'm sure everybody in Boston is not cultured and educated, but it's...
There are those few, of course. I get teased about my accent not being from Boston, so...
Yours isn't.
It comes up every once in a while. I get compared to everybody else.
Where is your accent from?
I'm actually originally from Connecticut.
Let me get a watch started here. Hang on just a second.
Sure.
I forgot to start it. We'll assume that a minute's gone by, so we'll just short everything.
Fine.
So now you're actually from where? I'm sorry.
I'm actually from Connecticut.
From Connecticut. Well, that's not that far.
It isn't, but you would be surprised the regional differences that do come up on occasion in my job, since I do a great deal of phone work. When I say the word ball or call, people really pick up on it. But otherwise, for the most part, it doesn't come up, you know. So I do often get compared to, well, you don't sound like you're from Boston.
Yeah.
So.
Well, those states, I don't mean to belittle them, but they're small states. I mean, when you drive in Texas, you can start at one end of Texas and be driving. And if you drive all day long, you won't be to the other end.
Exactly. Now, here you could sneeze, you know, and you'd be through. I'll be the first one to admit it.
Yeah, you go, because we took the train from New York City to Washington, and it just, I mean, it was just amazing how little time it took. It was 3 or 4 hours, but it...
Sure.
You know, it's just amazing. Anyway, you, what is your level of vision?
I actually am considered to be legally blind. I have no sight in my left eye, and my right eye, I have 2400 vision with glasses.
2400. So that's a small amount of vision, but it's certainly, if you're total, that certainly seems like a lot. I mean, it does.
Exactly. You know, I can tell, for example, the colors of things. I can tell, you know, if there's something obvious, you know, like if someone's wearing a necklace. But, for example, I wouldn't be able to tell you what color rouge someone had on. That's too fine of a detail. I wouldn't even be able to tell if there was makeup on at all. So there are some limitations, certainly. Of course, small print is a big issue. So anything and everything around here is either a combination of braille or large print. And on occasion, speech as well. But when it comes, like you said, to those who have no sight, it is a big difference.
Now, how did you get this way? I mean, what happened to cause this blindness? Do you know?
I have a good idea. I was born preemie, I was supposed to be actually a New Year's baby, and I decided that I wanted to make my appearance in Halloween. And so I spent 60 days in an incubator. And, of course, the classic tale of too much oxygen exposure is what they tell me was the cause of my disability. So the retinas themselves were damaged as a result.
So you came at 7 months rather than 9 months,
mm-hmm.
The classic 9 months. And so you actually begun life with sighted with eye problems.
Yes, I did.
Did you have more at one time? Was it getting less or what?
Well, I'd like to say in my 3 decades of experience, I would like to say that it's probably going down. Not that the acuity itself is changing, but that. They say as you get older, you find that you can't focus as well.
I know.
He laughs. It's true.
I laugh because I'm 63 and you're 30. When you really get old, hon?
Well, it's just from a comparative perspective. I can tell you from working in a hospital for 4 years, about, let's see, that's going on 15 years ago now. that I was able to read the small print, not like the smallest of print, but smaller print on a lot of the medical packages, so that when doctors and nurses needed things for their procedures, I was able to provide them. But in visiting my grandparents at the nursing home now and seeing some of the same packages, I've attempted to read them, and now I can't. And I have regular visits, and I know that my acuity hasn't changed, but the finer focus is not there like it used to be. So, and that just might be a lifestyle change as well, but they do say that that does tend to be the case.
So, but you've never been able to drive or any of that sort?
Oh, no, definitely not. I'm kind of glad, considering I'm sure you guys have heard the horror stories of how people drive up here in Boston. It's terrible. So I would rather use my 2 feet, thank you,
yeah,
in the public transportation.
So your parents, did they run you around from doctor to doctor and try to do something about this, or just accept it, or what did they?
Oh, well, as I understand it, there was a lot of turmoil right at the beginning. My mother, at the time, already had a son who had a lot of, serious medical problems due to asthma and allergies. So she'd already been used to the medical runaround.
Yeah.
She went to one doctor who told her this child will never walk, never do anything on her own, and she pretty much put her foot down and says, I refuse to believe that.
Yeah.
And then got the recommendation for another from her own mom and went to this gentleman by the name of Malcolm Gorin, who is no longer practicing, unfortunately. He was a wonderful inspiration once I became cognizant enough to appreciate his advice.
Uh-huh.
And he turned around and he had a totally different perspective. And he encouraged my mother to work past it, and she did, through divorce, through terrible, you know, trauma due to, you know, the stress and emotion. She got through it, had a lot of family support, a lot of friends who would come in, babysit, read stories, the whole works, and
yeah,
it allowed for a, what I would consider to be a semi-normal lifestyle, you know, for two kids with both having medical problems,
yeah,
you know. It worked out pretty well for her, I think, in the long run.
Well, what was this first guy's deal that said, this girl will never be able to do anything? What was his trip? What was he thinking? I wonder?
Don't know. She said that he was very old, very old school.
Uh-huh.
And I think that that probably had a lot to do with it. I mean, we're talking back in, you know, like early 70s, and things were still developing at that point. We didn't have a lot of the laws we do now that really encourage inclusion and mainstreaming and whatnot.
That's
so
true.
I still think there was a lot of questionable opinions in the medical community.
Well, that's certainly one, you know, as a... in my interviews of blind people and knowing blind people, we can do about anything sighted people do, short of driving a cab. And there are certain jobs blind people can't do. But I've been amazed, even since I've been doing this show 6 months, we've met a guy who is a physicist. We've met a guy who's a girl who's taking flying lessons.
Oh, neat. Uh-huh.
We've just met all kinds of people. We met a guy on the other day on the internet who has a business on the internet roasting coffee, and he's selling coffee on the internet, and this guy was an auto mechanic before that. There's no limit to what blind people can do.
Oh, no, there isn't. And it's funny you mentioned that company. I'm wondering if that's the Unseen Bean.
It is.
Oh, yes.
It is. Jerry Leary is the guy's
name. I was looking at that site and I'm going, oh, I think I'm just going to have to order some.
This is a blind fellow named Jerry Leary. He's in Reno, Nevada, maybe not. Maybe Boulder, Colorado. I get confused. I've done so many, I've gotten confused. But anyway, he's out west, and he's very interesting. If you want to go look at the archives,
uh-huh,
he was 3 or 4 shows ago.
Okay.
It'll be on the ACB archives. He was quite a fella. He spent most of his life working on cars.
Oh, wow. You'd be surprised.
So, yeah, you would be. Now, did they send you, what school, sort of school did they start you at? Was it young?
I actually went to, my mother went the whole route. She said, I'm not even going to consider alternative options for my daughter. I'm putting her in public school. And so I started out in Linden Nursery School in Meriden, Connecticut. I did have a special teacher that would come in Carla, she would come in a couple hours a day because I would have a lot of trouble with learning in the same way, of course, that the other children did. I could certainly pick up a lot of it, you know, listening.
Sure.
To actually see the shapes of the letters and the circles and the triangles and all the basic tools that you need, I just wasn't picking up on it. So she came in and she reinforced it with a lot of tactile training. And I still have some of the little shapes that she created herself.
Yeah.
Would put little magnets on, and I'd sit on the floor in this big open room with this, like, board, and she'd put the shapes up there, and I can still remember. It was it's a great experience. It was something that I think probably gave me the edge.
Yeah.
So it's something every blind student does need. And the other kids liked her, too. It wasn't like I stood out or, you know, that I was getting some sort of special treatment.
Yeah.
They liked her because the nursery school didn't have these things for everyone else. So in time, the teacher started incorporating some of her little tools into the rest of the children's teaching. And it made me feel more a part of the class. I ended up being there an extra year because of it, because I didn't spend as much time with the other children. And they wanted me to get the socialization skills, too. But I think it was a good experience, and it would be something that I would definitely recommend if it's possible. Not every community has that ability from day one. But if it's possible, go for it, because you don't want your child losing out. You know, from day one, it's crucial to get the good foundation.
Did they attempt to teach you Braille?
Believe it or not, Braille was not even considered for me until much later, and it was my choice to learn it. They started me with everything large print or on or audible form, all the way up through. Geez, I graduated high school. And only did I discover that Braille became a kind of a secondary tool for me once I got married, because I didn't always have, I mean, gee, you buy a little spice jar, you know. You can't put a huge large print label on it, but you can stick a little Braille label on it, you know.
Sure.
And so I chose to learn Braille at that point. I'm still not the best at it. I was one of the fastest learners, but since I don't use it on a regular basis, I've really kind of lost the main ability to, say, pick up a book and read a book in a night. But I could, for example, tell you what my spices are. And I don't mark them all, just kind of the newer ones until I get used to the look of the jar.
Now, Braille, you say pick up a Braille book and read it. Have you done that? Is that something
I did. It was one of the requirements in the rehab center that I went to before going to my second college. That's a whole other story.
Well, let's don't get ahead of ourselves.
Exactly.
Let's get you in school. And you went through the grade school all through public school.
Yes.
As a partially blind girl with sighted peers.
Yes, I did. Uh-huh.
With sighted kids. And you had friends?
I had some friends. I found that it was easier in elementary and middle school to have some friends. Not a lot. They were... You know how there's the acquaintance, there's the friend, and then there's your close friend. I'd say I was probably a mixture of acquaintances and friends. They were people who waved to you, said hi in the hallway, but it wasn't something that you know, got together and hung out, you know?
Uh-huh.
It was a comfortable existence, I'd say, through elementary and middle school. Again, I did have an itinerant teacher who has become my second mom in a way, Myrna Spencer. She was a real inspiration for me. When I would have trouble with, well, why don't I have friends? Why don't they want to hang out with me? And she would kind of put it right down on the, you know, right in the open and say, hey, look, you know, these people don't understand. They don't know what you can do, what you can't do. They see you in school, but they can't, you know, always go beyond that point. So, you know, it's not your fault. Don't feel bad about it. And I don't know how many times I had to be reinforced with this lesson, but it was good to know that someone could provide that feedback for me.
Sure. But there were no other blind children at your public school.
Well, I will be honest with you, elementary and middle school, I wasn't aware of any. Myrna Spencer was the itinerant teacher for the Meriden School System, and I always knew she had other students. But I always got the impression, at least through, especially through elementary school, I think I was aware of one other blind student in middle school. I can't think of his name offhand. I think it was Danny or Daniel. But it was never something, we never interacted. I was in one grade, he was in another. There was never any comparison made between the two. There was never any efforts to bring us together for peer association. But then when I hit high school, I was already considering what I wanted to do for my future, and started asking, well, you know I'm not your only student. You know, who else is out there? Can I meet them? Can I see how they do? And on occasion we would meet, but it still was something that Myrna kind of discouraged, not actively, but you all need to lead your separate lives was kind of her perspective,
yeah.
You know? And so on occasion, I would run into people, but I was her oldest. And she considered me to be one of her star pupils, I guess. It's still kind of one of those embarrassing things, but she really focused on making sure that I got the education I needed, got the social skills I needed, and made sure that I was successful. I worked with her. Carla finished with me in kindergarten, I think, right when I went into kindergarten, and Myrna took over from there. So we had a very long-standing relationship. She saw my development, and I think kind of took on a personal interest more than just as an itinerant teacher. So that's where the relationship ended up growing and still is today. And so it was... It was a good experience overall, I think, even though I didn't interact too often with other blind children.
All right, we're at about 15 minutes. Let's take a little short break and continue with Shelley Probst and sort of the story of her life on this edition of Blind Like Me back in just a minute.
Information you'll probably never need. Titillating tidbits to make you think on the blind side. Here's Mark Christie.
The Guide Horse Foundation, an organization to provide a safe and cost-effective, reliable mobility alternative for visually impaired people and to deliver trained guide horses at a no cost to the recipient, was founded in 1999 as an experimental program to access the abilities of miniature horses as assistance animals, because there is a critical shortage of guide animals for the blind. These friendly horses provide an alternative mobility option for blind people. People who have tried guide horses report that the horses demonstrate exceptional judgment and are not easily distracted by crowds and people. Guide horses are not for everyone, though. There are a strong demand for guide horses among blind horse lovers, those who are allergic to dogs, and those who want guide animals with a long lifespan. Why use a mini horse? Well, horses are natural guide animals. They have been guiding animals for centuries. In nature, horses have been shown to possess a natural guide instinct. Many blind people ride horses in equestrian competitions. Some blind people ride alone on trails for many miles, completely relying on the horse to guide them to safety to their destination. Through history, cavalry horses have been known to guide their injured rider to safety. Miniature horses can live to be more than 50 years old, with an average lifespan being between 30 and 40 years. They also have a very calm nature. Their trained horses are extremely calm in chaotic situations. Police horses are an excellent example of well-trained horses that deal with stressful situations. They also possess a great memory, excellent vision. They are safety conscious and have a high stamina rating. For more information on the Guide Horse Foundation, visit the web at Guide Horse Foundation. On the blind side, I'm Mark Christie.
On the blind side, celebrating the contribution of blind people to societal evolution.
are blind like me, our guest today is Shelley Probst from Boston, Massachusetts. Get you into you mentioned that you went to a couple of different colleges.
Yes.
So you did well in high school grade-wise. How did
yes.
you do?
I did very well. I ended up being on the Honor Society, and that was a lot of work for me.
Boy, it was without the assistance, without being a... because let's see, you were in high school. Did you have a computer? I guess we didn't have those by then, did we?
No, I actually didn't have a computer at that point. Although I can tell you, I can't imagine a time without having one.
Could you? Yeah, I can't either now. I've had mine 7 years. I don't know how the hell I live without. Could you see well enough to type on a portable typewriter? I suppose.
Yes, okay. I was using a typewriter from time to time, and at that point, like I said, when I had the ability to focus, I was able to do it. It was frustrating at times, but I could do it. I could see the letters. I knew my keyboard structure. But if I made a mistake, it was a devil trying to, you know, backspace and white out over it. But I could do it with some help.
So that's how you did your things and your reports in high school, and that's how you turned in papers, was typewriting.
Exactly. Now, we did have some... I think they were Macintosh computers in the library in high school. And I did do some minimal work on those as well. But I did find that most of my work was done either by typewriter or writing.
Yeah, because the computers back then would have been, there wouldn't have been any speech like we have now.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you see well enough. Do you use speech on your computer or not?
If I'm reading a very lengthy document, I will use speech just because it goes through a lot faster.
So you have Windows or JAWS or some speech something?
Actually, I use a program called ZoomText, and ZoomText has a basic speech program.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's so you are quite, your computer is a big part of your life now, right?
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm.
All right, we got into college, high school, good grades, walked across the stage, got your diploma, graduated, and next year started college. Tell
that's
us about
right.
college.
Okay, well, I started out at a college called St. Joseph's College. This was in West Hartford, Connecticut. It was a small Catholic girls' school. And the year or that summer, I remember crisscrossing Connecticut and then coming up here to Boston, Massachusetts, actually, and looking at different schools. And that's when the, I guess you could call it the overprotectiveness of my parents really started setting in. And I kind of gave into it a little bit, I have to admit. I had been accepted because of my grades at a very small school up here called Lesley College. And I think they have a top class size of 600 students. I think that actually might be the whole school size. And I backed down. I thought about going. It seemed like a good environment. And my mom went, oh, that's too far away. I don't like the look of the dorm room, and I don't want you going there. They're not going to give you enough support. And I didn't have that second opinion from Myrna to really back it up to say I need another perspective. She, of course, wasn't going to go. She had her other students. So it was between me and my mom. I pretty much gave in. I said, okay, let's go closer to home.
Okay.
And so I then went to St. Joseph College. Again, it was another small school, and I liked that idea.
Well, that's not a bad thing, going to college close to home.
No, it wasn't a horrible thing. It meant that I could come home and have Mom do my laundry.
Which is important,
other, you know,
yes, that's important.
Important things, you know, home cooking once in a while.
Right.
College terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And my first year went very well. I continued to excel academically. I made closer friends up there. I got to know people a little bit better. And again, there wasn't very many disabled people there. There was one other young lady by the name of Jennifer who I got to know. And I must have gone through one of those social, I don't know what to call them, backsteps, I guess you could say, where I found this other disabled person, and all I wanted to do was hang around with this other disabled person because I felt very insecure. I didn't have the support that I wanted or that I had been used to. She balked at it, and after a short period of time, she just said, look, I don't want to hang around with you anymore.
Whoa, what a devastating thing that
was. It hurt. It really did. and I didn't quite know how to take it, so I did spend a lot of time on the phone with Myrna, again, explaining what happened and what do I do. And
yeah.
And in time, it kind of passed, and I got to know other people, and what she said is instead of focusing on your disability, why don't you start seeing what else is around you? And that was a hard thing to do. That's really what you're supposed to do in college. You're supposed to expand your horizons. And so eventually I did. I got into choir. And I'd always been in choir from elementary school all the way up. Had been in special choirs, honors choirs and things like that. I had the gift of music. It was something that with good hearing you can really, you know, pick up on. So it worked out well for me. So I found a niche, and I got to know people there. And that's kind of what got me through my freshman year in college. Of course, taking all your basic courses, I really wasn't sure still what I wanted to do. I thought teaching was a good idea, and everybody kept encouraging it. So I said, okay, this has got to be the right thing for me. Sophomore year came around, and I went from black to white. Or no, let's change that, white to black. And I got a little bit too much into the socialization. Of course, the grades fell.
Yeah.
Not to the point where I was, you know, kicked out or anything, but they dropped dramatically. And for me, being an honors and excelling student, it was a scary thing. But I felt like life had kind of gone out of control for me. I didn't know what to do. I liked the social life. I didn't want to give that up. It was something that I felt I had been denied for ages.
Well, when you go to college, you're not judged so much on your cheerleader skills.
Nope.
You know, everything changes. That's what I keep telling my grandchildren and my nieces and nephews. You're not expected to be a beautiful cheerleader when you're in college. You make friends because they want to be your friend and, you know, not because you're popular for no
That's
other
correct.
Reason.
Correct. Exactly.
So you got into the social life pretty much.
I did. I wasn't one of those troublemakers, but I learned something called the Internet and spent a great deal of time communicating with others outside of my own school, other states, other countries, around the world. I actually met a couple of really decent people, one of which was a professor who also, ironically, had his own disability. That helped me through an advanced calculus. It was some advanced math course that I took. And I would go to this math class, and then I would, like, totally pull my hair out. And then I would sit down at the computer, and I would explain to him, okay, she presented this problem. I have no clue how to even take this into perspective. And it was almost like he took the course with me because he could break it down. And I barely passed the course. But I made it with his help. But there were a lot of unsavory influences online. But it was a safe environment. Nobody knew I was disabled other than those who I chose to reveal it to. And so it was a quote-unquote safe environment until I put my coursework aside too often to take refuge in this quote-unquote what I consider to be a social life.
Because you think you were still, your lack of sight was, at this point in your life, still causing some insecurity.
I definitely would think so, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to dwell on that, but it's a wonderful point and may, in a certain way, emphasize the point that you had never been around any successful blind people.
That's correct.
And you didn't know if there were any successful blind people.
Mm-hmm.
And you were the only blind person you really knew, and you thought, well, Jesus, maybe I, this is, and that's one of the reasons for this whole exercise, this blind like me, is to show recently blinded people, people who've recently lost their sight, or young blind people.
Mm-hmm.
What is my line? It's not a handicap, it's just an inconvenience.
That's correct, exactly.
And that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm a very good example.
It's a hell of an inconvenience at times, but it's just an inconvenience.
Exactly. It's all in how you take that, your quote-unquote limitations, and you make a way around them. You can't always take a straight path from A to B. Sometimes you have to go around about.
Yes. And so you, as you said, you were equal in stature equal in every way on the internet to everyone else there because no one knew. You couldn't see.
That's correct. They didn't know how I was sitting in front of the screen with this. I don't know if you've ever seen these. They're a pair of glasses, and they chip out this rounded section, and they insert a telescope lens. That's how I started using the computer, because it was the only way that I could bring the printing to my eye. And I looked at the site, let me tell you, and people were coming to the computer lab. But I didn't care, because after college, everybody knew me.
Yeah.
I was a very quick study. I learned a lot about the computer from the people in the lab. As a matter of fact, they were the ones who said, hey, Shell, you know, you really got to go do your studies. I know. You know, they saw the potential there and... started steering me away from too much social life and started showing me some of the other benefits of a computer. And that was a good thing, but the damage had already been done.
Well, I don't know. I don't know you. This is the first time I've ever talked to you in my life. But you're. I don't know if you've always been like this, but you're very outgoing. You seem to have a good grasp of what you want to say, and you say it. Have you always been like this or not?
I would have to say that. Spending a lot of time in the spotlight, like I said, being in choir, having solos. I will admit I've also taken some public speaking courses. And I've always felt that speaking your mind does need to come out because no one knows about you except you.
That's right.
And no one will learn about you, you know, unless you can express it in a good, concise and explicit manner.
Yeah.
And sometimes people find that to be a detriment too. Ask my boss at work, he'll tell you. but it's very important to be able to speak your mind in a way that can allow people to develop their own opinions.
Well, we had a lady three or four shows ago who we did the show, and she listened to the show, and she emailed me and said, Phil, I'm a blabbermouth. Why didn't you shut me up? And I said, well, because that's what we want you to do. That's the point of this whole exercise, is to find out about you, to let other blind people know who, you know, people listen to this all around the world, and they don't know you, they don't know your experience, but they can, if they're blind, some things you say they're going to be able to relate to.
That's right.
Because they've had some of the same experiences you have. But let's touch on music now. Did you just use your voice, or did you learn to play an instrument, or what?
That was one of the other challenges for me. I did take piano lessons for 4 years, something like that. And this is where my disability also did become a problem because, of course, trying to read sheet music, I was terrible. All through high school, elementary school, middle school, I did everything by ear. And I picked it up twice as fast as everyone else did and could lead the sopranos through the whole section. But when it came to actually sitting down and picking up on, well, geez, I have to sit here and read this staff, and I know every good boy deserves fudge, and I can do all this important theory. But when it came to actually... following a piece of sheet music so I wouldn't have to memorize it. It was impossible. I got very frustrated. And so I turned to singing and said, Mom, I just don't like piano very much. And that disappointed her because she bought me an upright piano for a birthday present.
Well, there's lots of pianos bought every year, but whose kids never become Liberace, you know.
Exactly. And I could play the music. I could play the basic stuff. I really enjoyed waltzes. I enjoyed rags, things like that, had a set rhythm, and I could really pick up on that and enjoy it. But when it came to complicated pieces, Moonlight Sonata, kind of escapes me who it's by now, it's terrible, was an extended work. And at one point I could play it, but I played it like with no emotion. I knew what I had to do, when I had to do it. But I couldn't connect with it. And that's when I realized that, no, piano isn't the right thing for me. My voice is what allows me to express myself the best. And that's where I excelled the best.
And you sang solos and you sang...
not as many solos as I would have liked to. There was a lot of competition.
Oh, sure.
Of course. And I, a lot of times, lost out. I could go into a whole long story about... and this actually may be an opportunity. I think I should probably tell you about this one, and I'll try to keep it as short as I can.
Okay, go ahead. We've got time now.
Okay. In high school, and this was a very heart-wrenching experience for me. and it taught me about how others really viewed me. We had a play or a musical, Oklahoma, my senior year of high school. And, of course, I was all excited. Those who were in the honors choir kind of got preferential audition times. And I went in to do an audition, and I was really encouraged by my choir teacher to try out for the part of Aunt Eller. I had the maturity. I had the look. I could carry it off very well, she said. So I went for it. There was another woman who went for the part who, well, also could carry it off well. I'd seen her. She and I knew each other. I'd seen her perform it, too, and we kind of compared notes. She showed up for the audition late, and I know she showed up for the audition late. I had a nice, bright, big, large print watch, and she showed up late because she was at some other sporting practice or something other. And she ended up getting the part. As a matter of fact, I remember through the whole audition, they said, if you show up late, you're not going to get a part. We'll watch you, but you're not going to get a part. And it made me very upset that they gave her the part over me. And so I badgered my choir teacher. I said, okay, there's more going on here than you're telling me. And at first she denied it and wouldn't go through any. Oh, she was there on time. And I had other people backing me up saying, no, she was late, maybe only by 5 minutes. And so finally she caved in. My mom came down to pick me up that day after the school. And she took my mom and myself aside and said, okay, I'm gonna put it to you as straight as I can, and I know you're not going to like it. And she said to me that...
I see this one coming up the highway.
Oh, can you see it?
Uh-huh. Sure. Go ahead.
It was explained to me that the drama teacher felt that a stage was no place for a person with a disability. And that really blindsided me.
That makes me mad.
It does.
Thinking about it.
I was ready just to punch the walls in at that point. And had Myrna been there, and had some influence, I have a feeling things would have gone differently. However, this was an extracurricular activity, and she could not step in on my behalf at that point. She could advise me on how I should take it, but she really had no say because it was not a required activity for schooling, so she couldn't advocate, which really didn't help. My mother, on the other hand, did not know how to advocate because Myrna had always done it for years. She kind of lost touch with that and didn't know either. And I remember trying to fight off the tears and try to explain to, geez, you know, you've known me for 7 years, all through middle school, all through high school. You know me better than that. Even if it takes me extra time, we can do this. Why can't we work this out? It was a lot of politics going on. I didn't get the part. I became understudy, which was okay, except I was so bitter inside that I really didn't take advantage of that either. They strung me along through the whole season of auditions and whatnot because this girl would never show up on time. Sometimes she wouldn't show up at all. But me being the bitter person that I was because I really felt like I had been betrayed, didn't learn the part well, didn't take the opportunity to, you know, learn my way around the stage well, I moped. I didn't appreciate the experience, and on hindsight, I wish I had, but of course, you know, I'm a teenager.
Hindsight's 2020, and so there you go.
Exactly. You learn very quickly that although you are quote-unquote accepted, if something arises that is outside of the norm, that is when, unfortunately, that the smoothly running machine comes to a grinding halt, and you learn that these people haven't expanded their own horizons. Had this choir teacher of mine, I think, pushed a little harder and didn't let the politics get to her, I think perhaps I might have had a better shot. I don't know for sure. I mean, it's really hard to say. I was too ripped to speak to the drama teacher. I think part of the reason why I didn't get it also was because I wasn't a part of the drama cast. They had their own drama club, and I did not participate. I think that had something to do with it, too. But the fact that my disability became an issue at all just really ripped me right down the center, you know?
It happens. You have to realize, and as we stumble through this world, and you'll realize it more and more the older you get, that losing is necessary sometimes. just so you become sort of inert to losing, so that it doesn't, so that you, when you go into something, you say, well, if I win this, fine. If I don't, who cares?
Exactly. And I wasn't at that point. I was still learning.
Well, no, you weren't. You were just a child.
That's it.
I bless your little heart.
You go through it. And that was, you know, it was a good experience. It did, to some degree, disenchant me to the whole idea of the performing arts, though, because I felt that, well, if this is happening now with people who are supposed to know who I am, what's going to happen with total strangers? So I backed off a lot when it came to college. I did go to the choir, but you can see why I didn't seek out the choir immediately when I went to St. Joe's, because I was very hesitant. And only after prodding did I go back and enjoyed it, certainly. And so St. Joe's went by. I was probably one semester away from being kicked out. And I decided that with a little prodding from my parents to consider other alternatives so that maybe I could get my life back in focus. And so that's when I switched schools, trying to bring this all the way back around to where we were before.
Okay. Well, that was a good story that needed to be told. You needed to tell that story, and I'm glad you did. So you changed colleges and ended up graduating?
I did graduate. I changed colleges. I went to Southern Connecticut State University for another couple of years. And there's more stories to be told here, and I really wish we had more than an hour, because these really need to be told.
Well, we'll come back to you in 6 or 8 months. Don't worry. We'll catch everybody twice. Trust me.
If we need to. I'll try to keep these short, too. College at Southern, I was still considering my potential as a special education teacher. First year went fine. Second year, for the most part, went fine, too. As a matter of fact, I brought my grade point average up. And there were, of course, some bumps along the road.
Yeah.
But they were nothing that I hadn't kind of gotten used to. Now, I got to know a really wonderful lady by the name of Sydney Howard. She now works in the Meriden school system where I used to go to school. So kind of worked out kind of in an ironic way.
Really?
She saw the potential for me being a teacher, as did several other professors. A lot of times I didn't know I was disabled. A lot of kids bring in tape recorders to take their classes. A lot of kids bring in notepads.
You did none of that.
I did all of that, and there was nothing that made me stand out. At that time, I wasn't walking around with a white cane.
A lot of kids bring in tape recorders, so you didn't stand out. I got your point.
Yeah, exactly. And so they saw the potential of me being a good teacher, and that made me feel even more justified.
Yeah.
It only took one semester, though, from a total stranger to blow it to pieces. And this woman, in the classroom, she was cool. I felt that she and I could discuss educational theory wonderfully, had no problem. When it comes to the practical application, though, she was old school. And what ended up happening is they put us into this class that it was pre-student teaching. And it was, we were the guinea pig class, because they wanted to get us some experience in the classroom before being thrust into the whole situation.
Yeah.
She put me in a classroom, inner city school kids. First graders, 30 of them, no teaching assistant, didn't even take into account my disability and my ability to teach these children. And to make a long story short, most of the semester went well because I really had very little supervision. The kids loved me. I had no problems teaching them. I got along very well with the teacher in the classroom, although she didn't play a big role, but she could see that the kids were happy. And that's what she wanted to see. She said, I couldn't really get that kind of response out of them that you did. And the rest of the day, when she would leave, was a much more comfortable setting. But three-quarters of the way through the semester, of course, here comes my professor. She wants to see what I've been doing. I showed her my work. She wasn't happy with it. She said that I wasn't following the quote-unquote plan of the class. And the teacher, instead of taking my side, sat and said nothing. I had to basically frantically put together something for the final assignment to try to pass the practicum course, the part of the course. Very dull, very boring. It just wasn't who I was. It was going against everything that I had been trying to teach these kids for the entire semester.
Mm-hmm.
It ended up starting a fight with two very volatile young boys and I ended up having 13 stitches on the left side of the head because I didn't see a pet rock coming at me. And I had no help. I remember a little girl running into the hallway going, my teacher got hurt, you know. She's on the ground, she's bleeding, you know. I was out of it. I just didn't know what to do.
They should not have put you in that situation to begin with.
They shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. And when the other professors in the department found out about it, they were outraged. They're like, how can you put it, you know, for all intents and purposes, a blind person in a classroom with 30 kids on her own? You just don't do that. And this teacher said, oh, she would have to do it, and she went the whole nine yards. She went to the dean of the school, and the dean of the school was her husband.
Yep.
That didn't go over very well for my case. I ended up taking two of the professors with me when I left. The teacher basically said, I'm not going to pass her. She couldn't handle the work. And I remember these other two professors saying, oh, wait a minute, you two, you are a special education teacher. She is a student needing special help. She went to you on several occasions. You refused to help her, said she had to figure it out herself. What kind of special education teacher are you, you know? So I took two of the professors with me. Although they did hem and haw, they tried to stick it out, couldn't do it. They left. One of those was Sydney Howard, and I still keep in touch with her. It pretty much dashed my dreams as a special education teacher because I just felt that, well, if these are supposed to be the educators of our, you know, of our children, and they can't help me, who is, like you said, outgoing and certainly willing to express herself, and then, you know, what hope do I have? So I said, okay, I need to back off here. I had 4 years of schooling under my belt, and I just didn't know what to do with it all. So I was newly married, too, so I had another perspective, and even my own husband said, you know what, those teachers aren't worth a, you know, one quarter, you know?
Yeah.
So you need to take a step back and put your life into perspective. I went to a third school.
A third college.
Third college.
Good heavens.
And at that point, I tried to reinvest myself in my love of music. Didn't work out as well as I wanted to, and this time I knew it just from the course load once I saw what was required of me. I want music to be a part of my life because I want it to be, not because it's going to be a career and you're going to make me audition for every little thing I do. I said, no, that's just not what I want to do. So I created my own degree over at the University of Minnesota instead of pursuing a music therapy degree. You know, the therapy part I had down, no sweat, but I couldn't handle the music part. I just couldn't do it. I had too many, you can kind of gather, too many scars, shall we say.
Yeah.
And so we traveled across the United States to Minnesota, talk about a totally new learning experience.
Really?
This is when I decided to learn Braille. This is when I was taught how to use a white cane. This is where I was taught how to learn to get around, to learn a new city. I had had some mobility training, very limited up until then, more as a, you use your cane as an identifier, not as a probing device to help you get around. And so this was the next step for me. This was, okay, embrace your disability and find all the ways you can get around it. So that you can function on your own without any trouble. So I did. I went for about a year before, because I couldn't go to University of Minnesota unless I wanted to pay 10 times the amount because I wasn't a resident of the state. So I waited a year, and I did this rehab. And I think it really did wonders.
Which, as far as I'm concerned,
yes,
you should have done in high school.
Yes.
And you know that now too.
Oh, definitely.
Okay, listen, I don't want to rush you, but let me just say this.
Uh-huh.
You got a degree from the University of Minnesota.
That's correct.
And in what did you said you invented it? What did you call it?
We ended up just calling it it was disability access. It didn't have you could call it anything you wanted to, but it was an intercollege degree.
Okay, so now you're 25, 26 years old now.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
What did you decide to do with this degree?
At that point, I had, in my degree work, taken some courses in customer service and business training and found that, well, geez, there is a way to teach teach adults. I like this. It's the teaching I like. It doesn't matter who I'm teaching.
Okay.
So I came to be interested in, well, how can I, you know, how can I get involved in the business community? So I went, we left Minnesota just shy. I had like one course to finish. We came back to Minnesota because the job situation, or we came back to the East Coast because the job situation in Minnesota wasn't too good.
Yeah.
My husband's a computer programmer, and we just wanted to be closer to the family. Couldn't stand the six-month-long winters. Too many things just weren't working our way out there socially. So we moved back here, and I started the job search. And that was not easy. I was very discouraged, and you've seen it. And you don't have to be disabled to experience
that's
the old.
True.
If you don't have any experience, how can I get any if you're not going to hire me?
Yeah, anymore? Chicken or egg, sure.
So I went through that for years. I went to Carroll School for the Blind out here for their career counseling services and had a very nice gentleman who really was motivated, thought that he saw a lot of potential again, but just couldn't find the right niche for me. People were very scared. People wanted to pay me pennies for, you know, for this pittance of a job that I'm supposed to be so happy with. And I would turn down job after job, and I'm like, you know what? You want me to sell light bulbs, or you want me to answer the phone all day for $6 an hour, and I'm supposed to be happy with this? Can you present it to me in a way that would make me feel proud of what I'm doing?
Okay, we're fast approaching the end.
Oh.
What did you finally end up doing?
Well, I am now a customer service representative for a student loan company called the Education Resource Institute. It's a division of First Marblehead Resources here in Boston.
And do you have to go somewhere to do this, or can you do it from home?
Nope. I actually have to go into work every day.
Yeah.
It's a fully stocked customer service center. I've been there for about a year and a half. Of course, I know we didn't really get to touch on the product access project. That became
well, I want to do that. We've got about 90 seconds. Can we do it quickly?
I'll do my best.
Okay. Okay.
Product access project was my attempt in my job searching to make a meaningful existence for myself.
Uh-huh.
It's a project design that allows people to access package information, nutrition information, ingredients, etc., that they can read on the internet. It was my way of giving back to the disabled community.
In other words, if you have a package of Heinz frozen peas,
yes,
and you want to know how to cook those,
you can go online.
You'll have instructions for those at a website.
That's right. Now, this website link is too long, and what I can do, Phil, is I can give you the website. And if people ask about it, I'm also intending to join the ACB radio list, so I can send it out that way as well.
That would be good. You don't want to give the URL. We've got time if you want to.
It's really long. I have to be honest with you. And this is kind of a little plug. I would like to do a domain name come 2004, since the site is really growing.
Uh-huh.
But it does take money, and it takes time and resources.
Yes.
And I will be honest with you. The site is...
Why don't you send me the URL to my email, and
yes,
if anyone wants it, I'll forward it back to them.
I think that would be...
My email is very simple. I'm just Phil Parr,
mm-hmm,
in my PHILPARR at lowercase, at T as in Tom, XUcom.net.
Oh, that's very easy. Okay, great.
At TXUcom.net. I'm just very simple. Everybody knows my email address. I get tons of email every day.
That's
so
perfect.
Send me the URL, and if anybody wants it,
mm-hmm,
I will either pass them on to Dale Campbell, or we'll email it back to them myself. How
that's right, and I'm also a member of the Cooking in the Dark mailing list myself, so I do talk to Dale on a semi-regular basis. So, anyone,
is it on there? Can you get it from the Cooking in the Dark list?
Yes.
Is it no?
He's
that's
got
good.
It at the bottom of all the emails that he posts. So.
Okay, that solves the problem right there. Cooking in the Dark at I think it's Topica.
Yes.
.com.
That's right.
Topica.com will get you, subscribe at Topica.com will get you in the Cooking in the Dark list.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we are absolutely out of time. We covered a lot of ground. We could have done it faster, but I wanted to let you go.
I appreciate that. I wish we could have done more, perhaps.
I wanted you to do your thing. Well, give me 6 months or 8 months or when. Let me get kind of back around, and I'll call you back, and we'll discuss. I want to talk more about this, your project of instructions for cooking things on the Internet. That's a wonderful thing to have.
Oh, I definitely think it will be a good thing in time. It's still relatively small, of course, with me doing my own job now 40 hours a week. The project is not getting the attention it really deserves.
Yeah.
And so in time, if anybody writes to you, if anyone writes to the Cooking in the Dark list, like I said, I will be on ACB Radio once I get my confirmation. Just ask, my name is Shelley Prue. Just ask for me. It's, I'm certainly willing to talk to anyone about it and give anybody the heads up since we couldn't cover it today.
Shelley Prue, thanks very much for being on the Blind Like Me show.
Thank you very much, Bill.
I did receive an email containing her URL, and it is long. It's much longer than it should be and much longer than she needs. But if you are not a member of the Cooking in the Dark list, you can certainly join that list, Cooking in the Dark-subscribe at Topica.com. You can get on that list, and you can find out about this little web-based instructions for cooking things, which is going to be a really neat deal once she gets it all up and gets a little simpler domain name. Anyway, if that fails, you can write me at blindlikeme@txucom.net or at philparr@txucom.net. Oh, and we'll give you the URL, okay? Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week with more of our little show we call Blind Like Me. Bye-bye.